Dalt stood back, and Josie, still holding Rick's arm, led him towards the open plan. Neither of them looked at me, so I was unsure if I should follow. And then they were gone, the adults once more filling the hall, and I was left standing near the front door. A new voice nearby said, "Nice boy. Lives next door, did he say? I couldn't hear." "Rick's a neighbor, yes," the mother said. "He's been friends with Josie forever." "That's wonderful." Then a large woman, whose shape resembled the food blending machine, said, "Seems so bright, too. Such a shame a boy like that should have missed out."
"I wouldn't even have known," another voice said. "He presents himself so well. Is that a British accent he has?"
"What's important," the food blending woman said, "is that this next generation learn how to be comfortable with every sort of person. That's what Peter always says." Then, as other voices murmured in agreement, she asked the mother, "Did his folks just decide not to go ahead? Lose their nerve?" The mother's kind smile vanished, and everyone who'd heard seemed to stop talking. The food blending woman herself froze in horror. Then she reached out a hand towards the mother.
"Oh, Chrissy, what did I say? I didn't mean..."
"It's okay," the mother said. "Please forget it."
"Oh, Chrissy, I'm so sorry. I'm so stupid sometimes. I only meant..."
"It's our worst fear," a firmer voice nearby said. "Every one of us here."
"It's okay," the mother said. "Let's leave it."
"Chrissy," the food blending woman said, "I only meant a nice boy like that. Some of us were lucky, some of us weren't." A black-skinned woman saying this stepped forward and touched the mother's shoulder kindly.
"But Josie's fine now, isn't she?" another voice asked. "She looks so much better."
"She has good days and bad," the mother said.
"She's looking so much better."
The food blending woman said, "She's going to be just fine. I know it. You were so courageous after all you'd been through. Josie will be really grateful to you one day."
"Pam, come on."
The black-skinned woman reached forward and began to lead the food blending woman away. But the mother, looking at the food blending woman, said quietly, "Do you suppose Sal would want to thank me?" At this, the food blending woman burst into tears.
"Look, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm so stupid. I just opened my mouth and..."
She sobbed, then continued loudly,
"And now you all know it. Know for certain I'm the world's greatest fool. It was just that nice boy. It seems so unfair. Chrissy, I'm so sorry."
"Look, really, please forget it." The mother, now making more effort, reached forward and held the food blending woman in a light hug. The food blending woman immediately returned the hug and went on crying, her chin on the mother's shoulder. There was an awkward quiet. Then the black-skinned woman said in a cheerful voice,
"Well, they seem to be managing okay in there. No sounds yet of an all-out brawl."
Everyone laughed loudly. And then the mother said in a new voice,
"Hey, what are we doing still out here? Let's go in the kitchen. Please, everyone. Melania's been preparing more of those wonderful pastries from her homeland."
A voice said in a pretend whisper, "I believe we're still out here so we can eavesdrop." This brought another big laugh, and the mother was smiling once more.
"If they need us," she said, "we'll hear about it. Please, go on through."
As the adults started to move into the kitchen, I could hear more clearly the voices from the open plan, but couldn't make out any words. An adult passed near me saying,
"Our Jenny got quite upset after that last meeting. We spent the whole weekend explaining to her how she'd misinterpreted everything."
"Clara, you're still here?" The mother was standing before me.
"Yes."
"Why aren't you in there with Josie?"
"But..."
She didn't take me in. Go on. She needs you with her. And the other kids want to meet you.
Yes, of course. Then excuse me. The son, noticing there were so many children in the one place, was pouring in his nourishment through the wide windows of the open plan. Its network of sofas, soft rectangles, low tables, plant pots, photograph books, had taken me a long time to master. Yet now it had been so transformed, it might have been a new room. There were young people everywhere, and their bags, jackets, oblongs were all over the floor and surfaces. What was more, the room's space had become divided into 24 boxes, arranged in two tiers, all the way to the rear wall. Because of this partitioning, it was hard to gain an overall view of what was before me, but I gradually made sense of things. Josie was near the middle of the room, talking with three guest girls. Their heads were almost touching, and because of how they were standing, the upper parts of their faces, including all their eyes, had been placed in a box on the higher tier, while all their mouths and chins had been squeezed into a lower box. The majority of the children were on their feet, some moving between boxes. Over at the rear wall, three boys were seated on the modular sofa, and even though they were sitting apart, their heads had been placed together inside a single box, while the outstretched leg of the boy nearest the window extended not only across the neighboring box, but right into the one beyond. There was an unpleasant tint on the three boxes containing the boys on the sofa, a sickly yellow, and an anxiety passed through my mind. Then other people moved across my view of them, and I began to attend instead to the voices around me. Although someone had said as I'd come in, "Oh, here's the new AF, she's cute," almost all the voices I now heard were discussing Rick. Josie must only recently have been standing beside him, but her conversation with the guest girls had caused her to turn her back to him, and he was now by himself, not conversing with anyone.
"He's a friend of Josie, lives nearby," a girl was saying behind me.
"We should be nice to him," another girl said. "It must be weird for him being here with us."
Why'd Josie ask him? He must feel so weird.
"How about we offer him something? Make him feel welcome."
The girl, who was thin and had unusually long arms, picked up a metal dish filled with chocolates and went towards Rick. I also moved further into the room and heard her say to him,
"Excuse me, would you care for a bonbon?"
Rick had been watching Josie talking to the three guest girls, but now turned to the long-armed girl.
"Go ahead," she said, raising the dish higher.
"They're good. Thank you very much."
He looked into the dish and chose a chocolate wrapped in shiny green paper. Though the voices continued all around the room, I realized that suddenly everyone, including Josie and her guest girls, was now watching Rick.
"We're all so pleased you came," the long-armed girl said. "Josie's neighbor, right?"
"That's right. I live next door."
"Next door? That's a good one. Only your house and this one, that's all there is for miles."
The three girls Josie had been talking to now joined the long-armed girl, all the time smiling at Rick. Josie herself, though, remained where she was, her eyes watching anxiously.
"I suppose so," Rick laughed quickly. "But that still makes me next door."
"Sure does. Bet you like being out here. Must be peaceful."
"Peaceful is correct. It's all quite perfect until you want to go to the movies."
I knew Rick hoped everyone listening would laugh, as the adults had done about the pizza deliveries. But the four girls just continued to look at him in a kindly way.
"So you don't watch movies on your DS?" one of them asked eventually.
"I do sometimes. But I like going to a real movie theater. Big screen, ice cream. My mother and I enjoy that. Trouble is, it's such a long way to go." We have a movie theater end of our block, the long arm girl said, but we rarely go.
Hey, he likes movies.
Missy, please. Sorry, you have to excuse my sister. So you enjoy movies. Help you relax, right?
I bet you like action movies, said the girl called Missy.
Rick looked at her. Then he smiled and said, Those can be fun. But Mom and I like the old movies. Everything was so different then. If you watch those movies, you can see the way restaurants were once, the clothes people wore.
But you must like action, right? Said the long-armed girl. Car chases and stuff.
Hey, another girl said behind me. He's saying he goes to the movies with his mom. That's kind of cute.
Doesn't your mom like you to go with your friends?
It's not like that exactly. It's something my mother and I like to do.
Did you go and see Gold Standard? No way his mom would like that.
Josie now stepped forward in front of Rick.
Come on, Rick.
Her voice had anger in it. Tell them what you like to watch. That's all they're asking. What do you like to watch? Several more guests had by now gathered around Rick, partially blocking my view of him. But I could see at this moment something change within him.
You know what?
He spoke not to Josie, but to all the others.
I like movies in which horrible things happen. Insects coming out of people's mouths, things of that nature.
Really?
May I just ask, Rick said. Why all this curiosity about what kind of movies I like?
It's called conversation, said the long-armed girl. Why doesn't he eat his chocolate? Missy said. He's just holding it.
Rick turned to her, then held out the chocolate still in its wrapping.
Here, perhaps you'd care for it yourself.
Missy laughed, but backed away.
Look, said the long-armed girl.
This is like a friendly encounter, okay? Rick glanced quickly at Josie, who was staring at him, her eyes filling with anger. The next second, he'd turned again to the guest girls.
Friendly, of course. I wonder if it would please you all to hear I like bug movies.
Bug movies? Someone else said. Is that like a genre?
Don't taunt him, said the long-armed girl. Be nice. He's doing okay. A voice said,
Yeah, he's doing okay. And several people giggled.
As Rick turned quickly towards them, Josie reached forward and took the chocolate from him.
Hey, everyone, Josie called out. I want you all to meet Clara. This here's Clara.
She was signaling to me to come closer, and as I did so, all the eyes turned my way. Rick, too, looked at me, but only for a second. Then he walked off into a small clearing beside the corner desk. No one seemed to pay him further attention, because they were now looking at me. Even the long-armed girl had lost interest in Rick and was staring at me.
Now that's a smart-looking AF, she said.
She leaned towards Josie in a confidential manner, and I thought she was going to say something further about me. But what she said was,
See Danny over there?
First thing he comes in, he announces how he got detained by the police. No greeting, nothing. When we told him he had to greet correctly first, he still doesn't get it. Just keeps boasting about him and the police.
Wow.
Josie looked to the boys on the modular sofa. So he thinks it's smart to be a criminal? The long-armed girl laughed, and Josie became part of a shape the five girls made together. Then his brother over there gives it away. Too much beer. That's all it was.
Shush! He knows we're talking about him, someone said.
So much the better. The cops found him passed out on a bench and took him home. And he's telling us like he was arrested or something.
No greeting, nothing.
Hey, I didn't hear you give Josie a greeting just now, Missy. So you're just as bad as Danny.
I did. I said hello to Josie,
Josie, did you hear my sister greet you when you came in?
Missy became visibly upset.
I did say hello. It's just that Josie didn't hear me.
Hey, Josie.
The boy called Danny, the one on the sofa with his leg extended over the cushions, was calling from the rear of the room.
Hey, Josie, that your new AF? Tell her to come over here.
Go on, Clara, Josie said. Go say hello to those boys.
I didn't move at once, partly because I'd been surprised by Josie's voice. It was like the one she sometimes used when talking to Melania Housekeeper, but not like any voice she'd used before to me.
What's up with her?
Danny got up off the sofa.
Doesn't she take commands?
Josie was giving me a stern look, so I began to make my way towards the boys on the sofa. But Danny, who was taller than anyone else in the room, came swiftly through the other guests and, before I was even halfway to the sofa, grasped me by both elbows so I could no longer move freely. He looked me up and down, then said,
"So, settling in?"
"Yes, thank you."
One of the other boys from the sofa at the rear shouted,
"Hey, she speaks, rejoice!"
"Shut up, scrub,"
Danny shouted back. Then he asked me,
"So, what do they call you again?"
"Her name's Clara," Josie said from behind me. "Danny, let go of her. She doesn't like being held that way."
"Hey, Danny," scrub shouted again, "throw her over here." "You want to see her?" Danny said. "Get up off that sofa and come over here."
"Just throw her over. Let's test her coordination."
"She ain't your AF, scrub."
Danny's hands were still tight around my elbows.
"You need to ask Josie about something like that."
"Hey, Josie," scrub called. "It's okay, right? My B3, you can swing her right through the air, lands on her feet every time. Come on, Danny, throw her over onto the sofa. She won't get damaged."
"So uncouth," the long-armed girl said quietly, and several girls, Josie included, giggled.
"My B3, Scrub continued, "she'll somersault and land clean on her feet. Back straight, perfect. So let's see what this one can do."
"You're not a B3, right?"
Danny asked. I didn't reply, but Josie behind me said,
"No, but she's the best."
"Yeah? So can she do what Scrub says?"
"I have a B3 now," a girl's voice said. "You'll see him next meeting."
Then another voice asked,
"Why didn't you get a B3, Josie?"
"Because I like this one."
Josie said this uncertainly. But then the strength returned to her voice.
"There's nothing any B3 can do Clara can't."
There was movement behind me. And then the long-armed girl was standing beside Danny. He seemed to feel both excitement and fear to be near her, and let go of my elbows. But now, the long-armed girl gripped my left wrist, though not nearly as roughly as Danny had been holding me.
"Hello, Clara," she said, and looked me over carefully again.
"Now, let's see. Clara, will you please sing for me the harmonic minor scale?"
I wasn't sure how Josie wished me to respond, so I waited for her to speak. But she remained silent.
"Oh, you don't sing?"
"Come on," the boy called Scrub called out. "Throw her over. If she can't coordinate, I'll just catch her."
Not saying much.
The long-armed girl came closer and stared at my eyes.
"Maybe she's low on solar."
"There's nothing wrong with her." Josie said this so quietly, it was possible I was the only one to hear.
"Clara," the long-armed girl said, "give me a greeting."
I remained silent, waiting for Josie to speak again.
"No? Nothing?"
"Hey, Josie," a voice said behind me. "You could have got a B3, right? So why didn't you?"
Josie laughed and said,
"Now I'm starting to think I should have."
This brought other laughs. Then a new voice said, "B3s are so amazing."
"Come on, Clara," the long-armed girl said. "A little greeting, at least."
I'd by now fixed a pleasant expression on my face and was gazing past her, much as manager had trained us to do in the store in such situations.
"An AF who refuses to greet. Josie, will you tell Clara to say something to us?"
"Throw her over here. That'll bring her to life."
"Clara's got a great memory," Josie said behind me. "As good as any AF anywhere."
"Oh, really?"
said the long-armed girl.
"And not just her memory. She notices things no one else does and stores them away."
"Okay." The long-armed girl kept holding my wrist.
"Okay, Clara. Here's what to do. Without turning to look, tell me what my sister's wearing."
I continued to stare beyond the long-armed girl at the bricks on the wall.
"Seems to have frozen. But she's cute. I'll give you that."
"Ask her again," Josie said. "Go on, Marcia. Ask again."
"Okay. Now, Clara, I know you can do it. Tell me what Missy's wearing."
"I'm sorry," I said, still looking past her.
"You're sorry?"
Then the long-armed girl said to the room,
"What's that mean?"
And people laughed. Then she glared at me and asked,
"What do you mean, Clara? What do you mean you're sorry?"
"I'm sorry, I'm unable to help."
"She's not going to help."
The long-armed girl's look softened, and at last she released my wrist.
"Okay, Clara. You can turn and look. Take a look at what Missy's wearing."
Though it might look impolite, I didn't turn. Because if I did so, I'd not only see Missy. I knew, of course, what she was wearing, down to her purple wristband and tiny bear pendant, but also Josie. And then we would have to exchange looks with each other.
"I give up," the long-armed girl said.
"Okay," Danny said. "Then we'll do Scrubs test, just to please him. Phil, come here and help me swing her. Scrubs, stay where you are. Get ready to catch. This is okay with you, Josie?"
Behind me, Josie remained silent, but a girl's voice said,
"Throwing AFs across the room, that's evil."
"What's evil about it? They're designed to deal with it."
"That's not the point," the girl's voice said. "It's just nasty."
"You're being soft," Danny said. "Phil, take her arms. I'll get the legs."
"What's that you have there in your pocket?"
It was Rick who'd spoken, and the room went silent.
"What'd you say, friend?"
Rick moved through the guests, stopping a little to my right. He showed no fear as he pointed at the breast pocket of Danny's shirt. I'd noticed the object earlier, a soft toy dog small enough for the pocket. I'd seen children of 7 and 8 carrying such toys in their pockets when they'd come into the store. As everyone shifted positions to see what Rick was pointing at, Danny raised both hands to cover his pocket.
"A pet object, I'd say," Rick said.
"It's not a pet object," Danny said.
"I'd say it's your pet object, to help you feel calmer at gatherings like this one."
"What's this bullshit? Who asked you anything?"
"If it's really nothing so special, perhaps you wouldn't mind showing it to me."
Rick held out his hand.
"Don't worry, I'll take good care of it."
"Whether it's anything special or not, it's none of your business."
"Do please let me borrow it, just for a minute."
"It's nothing to me, but I wouldn't hand it over to you."
"No, not even a little peek."
"I'd never lend you anything. Why would I? You shouldn't even be here."
Rick was still holding out his hand, and the room remained silent.
"It couldn't be. You're perhaps a little soft yourself, Danny," Rick said. "At least, when it comes to cute little things for the pocket."
"That's enough! You leave Danny be!"
The voice belonged to an adult, and the young people around me shrank back as the woman came striding into the room.
"And Danny's right," she said. "You shouldn't be here at all."
Then the mother came hurrying in after her, and I saw other adults looking through the doorway into the open plan.
"Come on, Sarah," the mother was saying. "We don't interfere, remember?"
The mother put an arm around the Sarah woman, who continued to glare at Rick.
"Come on, Sarah, play by the rules. It's for the kids to sort out."
Sarah continued to look angry, but allowed herself to be led away out of the room and into the murmur of adult voices in the hall. One of the voices said, "It's the only way they'll learn." And then the adult voices receded, and there was silence in the open plan. Danny was perhaps even more embarrassed about his adult's interference than he'd been about the small toy. He continued to cover his breast pocket with both hands as he returned to the sofa. His now slightly hunched back turned to the room.
"Okay," the long-armed girl said brightly. "How about we go outside for a while? It's turned nice out there, look."
A chorus of voices shouted approval, and I heard Josie's among them saying,
"Great idea, let's do it."
The children filed out, led by Josie and the long-armed girl. Danny and Scrub left with them, and then there was only Rick and myself in the open plan. Rick looked around at the discarded jackets, displaced seat cushions, plates, soda cans, potato snack bags, magazines, but he didn't look towards me. I wondered if any adults would come in to tidy now that the children had left, but none of them came, and the blur of voices continued from the kitchen.
"You challenged that boy, I think, for my benefit," I said eventually.
"Thank you."
Rick shrugged. He was getting seriously annoying. In fact, they all were. Then he added, still not looking my way, "I suppose it wasn't exactly enjoyable for you either."
"It became uncomfortable for me, and I was grateful for Rick's rescue. But it has also been very interesting."
"Interesting?"
"It's important for me to observe Josie in many situations. And it was very interesting. For instance, to observe the different shapes the children made as they went from group to group."
When he said nothing to this, and continued to look the other way, I said, "Perhaps Rick wishes to go out now and join them. Reconcile with them." He shook his head. Then he moved through the sun's pattern. The open plan, I noticed, was no longer spatially segmented, and sat down on the modular sofa, stretching his legs out across the floorboards.
"I suppose they have a point, though," he said. "I don't belong here. This is a meeting for lifted kids."
Rick came because Josie very much wanted him to come.
"She insisted I came. But I suppose she's too busy now to come back in here. See how I'm enjoying this part of the party."
He leaned back into the sofa till the sun's pattern was over his face, obliging him to close his eyes.
"The trouble is," he went on, "she doesn't stay the same. I thought if I came today, stupid really, I thought she might not change, might stay the same Josie."
When he said this, I saw again Josie's hands at various points during the interaction meeting. Welcome hands, offering hands, tension hands. And her face, and her voice when someone had asked why she hadn't chosen a B3. And she'd laughed and said, "Now I'm starting to think I should have." And manager's words came into my mind. Her warning about children who made promises at the window, yet never returned. Or worse still, returned and chose another AF altogether. I thought about the boy AF I'd seen through the gap between the slow taxis, walking despondently along the RPO building side, 3 paces behind his teenager. And I wondered if Josie and I would ever walk in such a way.
"Perhaps you can see now," Rick said, opening his eyes despite the sun's pattern.
See how I need to save Josie from this lot.
I can see Rick is afraid Josie might become like the others. But even though she behaved strangely just now, I believe Josie is kind underneath. And those other children, they have rough ways, but they may not be so unkind. They fear loneliness, and that's why they behave as they do. Perhaps Josie too.
If Josie hangs out with them much more, she soon won't be Josie at all. Somewhere, she knows that herself. And that's why she keeps on about our plan. For ages, she'd forgotten about it. But now she talks about it all the time.
I heard Josie mention this plan the other day. Is it a plan about Rick and Josie sharing a future together? He looked past me out of the open plans window, and I thought his hostility towards me had returned. But then he said,
"It's just something we started when we were young, before we realized how it would be, how all these things could get in our way. Even so, Josie still believes in it."
"And Rick still believes in the plan, too?" He now looked directly at me.
"Like I say, without the plan, she's going to end up becoming one of them. I'd better go."
He rose suddenly.
"Before those kids come back, or that crazy mother."
"I hope we can soon talk again about these matters, because I believe in many ways Rick and I have similar goals."
"Look, the other day, when I said about not wanting Josie to have an AF, it wasn't anything personal. It was just, well, it felt like something else that would get in our way."
"I hope not. In fact, now I understand more. I'd like to do my best to help with Rick and Josie's plan. Perhaps help remove the obstacles you talk about."
"I'd better go. Check my mom's all right."
"Of course." He walked past me and out of the open plan. I took a few steps forward so I could watch him go out through the front door and into the sun's brightness. As I said to Rick that day, the interaction meeting had been a source of valuable new observations. I had, for one thing, learned about Josie's ability to change, as Rick had put it, and I watched carefully for signs of her doing so again. I wondered, too, how much she really did wish she'd chosen a B3. Her remark had most likely been intended as a humorous one, to keep back the threat of disharmony during the meeting. Even so, it was true B3s had capabilities beyond my own, and I had to consider the possibility that Josie might sometimes entertain such ideas in her mind. In the days following the meeting, I worried also about how Josie might view my failure to respond to the long-arm girl's questions. In the situation that had developed, and in the absence of clear signals from Josie, I'd taken the course I'd considered to be for the best. But it now occurred to me Josie might, after a period of reflection, become angry with me. For all these reasons, I feared the interaction meeting might place shadows over our friendship. But as the days went by, Josie remained as cheerful and kind to me as she'd ever been. I waited for her to bring up the events of the meeting, but she never did so. As I say, these were helpful lessons for me. Not only had I learned that changes were a part of Josie, and that I should be ready to accommodate them, I'd begun to understand also that this wasn't a trait peculiar just to Josie, that people often felt the need to prepare a side of themselves to display to passers-by, as they might in a store window, and that such a display needn't be taken so seriously once the moment had passed. I was happy then that nothing changed between us on account of the meeting. However, not long afterwards, something else came along which did for a time make our friendship less warm. This was the trip to Morgan's Falls, and it came to trouble me because I couldn't for a long time see how it had created coldness between us, or how I might have avoided such a thing happening. Early one morning, 3 weeks after the interaction meeting, I looked over to Josie and could tell from her posture and her breathing that she wasn't sleeping in her usual way. I used the alarm button, and the mother came immediately. She phoned for Dr. Ryan, and then I heard Melania housekeeper calling him again a little later to ask him to hurry. When he did come, he checked Josie over carefully, then said there was nothing to worry about. The mother was relieved, and once the doctor had left, her manner became brisk. She sat on the edge of Josie's bed and said to her, "You have to quit that energy drink. I always said it was bad for you." Josie said, not lifting her head from her pillow, "I knew there was nothing wrong with me. I got really tired is all. You didn't have to worry about me. And now you're going to be late for work." "Worrying about you, Josie, that's my work." Then she added, "Clara's work too. She did well to raise the alarm. I just need to sleep a little more. Then I promise I'll be fine, Mom." "Listen, honey." The mother leaned right over till she was talking into Josie's ear. "Listen, you need to get well for me. Do you hear me?" "Hear you, Mom." "Good. I wasn't sure you were listening." "Listening, Mom. I'm keeping my eyes shut is all." "Okay. So here's the deal. Get better by the weekend and we'll go to Morgan's Falls. You still love that place, right?" "Yes, Mom, I still love it." "Good. Then that's the deal. Sunday, Morgan's Falls. So long as you get well." There was a long silence. Then I heard Josie say, as though into her pillow, "Mom, if I get well, can we take Clara with us? Show her Morgan's Falls? She's only ever been outside once, and that was just around here." "Of course Clara can come, but you'll have to get well or none of this works. You understand, Josie?" "I understand, Mom." "I have to sleep some more now." She woke up just before lunch, and I was going to tell Melania housekeeper as I'd been instructed to do, but Josie said tiredly, "Clara, have you been here the whole time I've been sleeping?" "Of course." "Did you hear what Mom was saying about us going to Morgan's Falls?" "Yes, and I'm very much hoping we'll be able to go. But your mother said we'd go only if you were well enough." "I'll be okay. If I wanted, I could go this afternoon. Just tired, that's all." "What is this Morgan's Falls, Josie?" "Beautiful, is what it is. You'll think it's amazing. I'll show you pictures later." Josie remained tired for much of the day. But in the late afternoon, once I raised the bedroom blinds to let the sun's pattern fall over her, she became noticeably stronger. Melania housekeeper came up to see her then and said Josie could get dressed so long as she promised to spend the rest of the day quietly. That was how we came to still be in the bedroom as the evening approached, when Josie produced a cardboard box from under her bed. "I'll show you," she said, and tipped the box out. Many print photos of varying dimensions tumbled out onto the rug. Some face up, others down. I understood that these were favorite images from Josie's past, kept near her bed so she could cheer herself up viewing them whenever she wanted. Many of the images were now overlapping, but I could see they were mostly of Josie when younger. Some photos showed her with the mother, some with Melania housekeeper, others with people I didn't know. Josie continued spreading them across the rug, then picked one up and smiled. "Morgan's Falls," she said. "This is where we're going on Sunday. What do you think?" She gave me the photo. I was by now kneeling beside her, and I saw a younger Josie sitting outdoors at a table made from rough wooden planks. Even the seating was planks, and sitting beside her was the mother, less thin and with her hair cut shorter than now. I was interested to see a third figure at the table, a girl who I estimated as 11 years old, wearing a short jacket made of light cotton. Because the stranger girl was sitting with her back to the photographer, I couldn't see her face. The sun's patterns were visible over them all, falling across the tabletop. Behind Josie and the mother was a blurred black and white pattern. I inspected this carefully, then said, "This is a waterfall."
"Yep. You ever seen a waterfall, Clara?"
"Yes. I saw one in a magazine at the store. And look, you're eating right in front of the waterfall."
"You can do that at Morgan's Falls. Have lunch while the spray covers you. You're eating your food, then you realize your shirt's soaked at the back."
"That can't be good for you, Josie."
"It's okay when it's warm, but you're right. On a chilly day, you have to sit further away. There's plenty of seating, though, because people don't know about Morgan's Falls so much."
She reached out a hand, and I returned the photo to her. She looked at it again and said, "Maybe it's only me and Mom think it's special. And that's why it's never crowded. But we always have a great day there. I do hope you'll be strong enough this weekend."
"Sunday's always the best day for Morgan's Falls. There's a good atmosphere on Sundays. It's like the waterfall knows about it being a day of rest."
"Josie, who is your companion in this photograph? The girl here with you and your mother?"
"Oh."
Her face became serious. Then she said, "That's Sal, my sister." She let the photo fall on top of the others, then began to pass both hands over the images, moving them around the rug. I saw images of children, in fields, in playgrounds, outside buildings.
"Yeah, my sister," she said again, after a long time.
"And where is Sal now?"
"Sal died."
"How very sad."
Josie shrugged. "I don't remember her much. I was small when it happened. It's not like I miss her or anything."
"How sad. Do you know what happened?"
"She got sick. Not the same sickness I have. Something much worse. And that's why she died."
I thought Josie was searching for another photo with her sister's image, but she suddenly gathered the prints together and put them back into the cardboard box.
"You're so going to love it up there, Clara. Here's you, only once been outside. Then suddenly you're up there."
Josie became stronger each day, so that as the weekend approached, there seemed no reason to suppose we wouldn't be able to go to the waterfall. On the Friday evening, the mother came home late, long after Josie had finished her supper, and called me into the kitchen. Josie had by then gone up to her room, and the kitchen was in near darkness, with only the light from the hall to illuminate it. But the mother seemed happy to stand there before the large windows, staring out into the night as she drank her wine. I stood near the refrigerator, where I could hear its hum.
"Clara," she said after a while,
"Josie says you wish to come with us on Sunday, to Morgan's Falls."
"If I wouldn't be in the way, I'd very much like to come. I believe Josie also wishes me to come."
"She certainly does. Josie's become very fond of you. And if I may say so, so have I."
"Thank you."
"To tell you the truth, I wasn't sure at first what I'd feel, having you around, moving through the house all day. But Josie's so much more calm, so much more cheerful since you got here."
"I'm so glad."
"You're doing very well, Clara. I want you to know that."
"Thank you so much."
"You'll be fine up at Morgan's Falls. Plenty of kids take their AFs up there."
"Even so,
It goes without saying, you'll need to look out, both for yourself and for Josie. The terrain can be unpredictable, and Josie sometimes gets overexcited in places like that.
I understand. I'll be cautious.
Clara, are you happy here?
Yes, of course.
Curious thing to ask in AF. In fact, I don't even know if that question makes sense. Do you miss that store? She drank more wine and stepped towards me, so I could see one side of her face in the light from the hall, though the other side, including most of her nose, stayed in shadow. The one eye I could see looked tired.
I sometimes think about the store, I said. The view from the window, the other AFs, but not often. I'm very pleased to be here.
The mother looked at me for a moment. Then she said, it must be great not to miss things, not to long to get back to something, not to be looking back all the time. Everything must be so much more. She paused, then said, okay, Clara, so you're with us Sunday, but remember what I said. We don't want accidents up there. There must have been signals all along, because although what happened that Sunday morning made me feel sadness later and reminded me again how much I had still to learn, it didn't come as a true surprise. By the Friday, Josie was confident she'd be well enough for the expedition and spent many moments trying on different outfits and studying herself in the long mirror inside the wardrobe. Occasionally, she'd ask me what I thought, and I'd smile and be as encouraging as I could. But I must even then have been aware of the signals, because when I praised her appearance, I was always careful to hold something back. I knew already that Sunday breakfasts could become tense. On other mornings, even when the mother stayed beyond her quick coffee, there was still the feeling that every exchange could be the last till the evening. And while this sometimes made both Josie and the mother speak sharply to each other, the breakfast couldn't become loaded with signals. But on a Sunday, when the mother wasn't about to go anywhere, there was the feeling that each question she asked could lead to an uncomfortable conversation. When I was still new in the house, I believe there were particular danger topics for Josie, and that if only the mother could be prevented from finding routes to these topics, the Sunday breakfasts would remain comfortable. But on further observation, I saw that even if the danger topics were avoided, topics like Josie's education assignments or her social interaction scores, the uncomfortable feeling could still be there because it really had to do with something beneath these topics. That the danger topics were themselves ways the mother had devised to make certain emotions appear inside Josie's mind. So I became concerned when on that Sunday morning of the trip to Morgan's Falls, the mother asked Josie why she liked to play a particular oblong game in which the characters continually died in car accidents. Josie had at first replied cheerfully,
it's just the way the game's set up, Mom. You get more and more of your people in the superbus, but if you haven't figured out the routes, you can lose all your best people in a crash.
Why would you play a game like that, Josie? A game in which something awful like that happens. Josie continued for a while to answer the mother patiently, but before long the smile left her voice. In the end, she was repeating that it was just a game she enjoyed, while the mother asked more and more questions about it and seemed to become angry. Then the mother's anger seemed all at once to vanish. She still didn't become cheerful, but she looked at Josie in a gentle way, and her kind smile transformed her entire face. I'm sorry, honey. I shouldn't be bringing this up today. I'm being so unfair. And she stepped off her high stool, went to the one Josie was on, and held Josie in an embrace that seemed to go on and on, until the mother was obliged to introduce a rocking motion to disguise how long it was lasting. Josie, I could see, didn't mind at all how long the hug lasted. And when they separated, I didn't turn from the refrigerator until I was sure they had. The rift between them had been mended. So the breakfast I'd feared might pose a last obstacle to our going to Morgan's Falls ended in harmony, and my mind became filled with excitement. Only in the final moments, after the mother and Melania housekeeper had already gone out to the car, did I see Josie. As she placed her arms through the sleeves of her padded jacket, pause and allow weariness to pass through her. She finished putting on the jacket, and noticing me across the hall, smiled brightly. Then we heard the car outside and the wheels moving over the loose stones. Melania housekeeper came back into the house, holding her keys and gestured for us to go out. But now that I was aware, I was able to see another tiny signal. Something in Josie's hurried step as she walked ahead of me out onto the loose stones. The mother was behind the wheel, watching us through the windshield, and a fear came into my mind. But Josie betrayed no more signs. She even managed a skip of happiness as she crossed the loose stones and opened the front passenger door by herself. I'd never been inside a car before. But Rosa and I had watched so many people get in and out of vehicles, their postures and maneuvers, how they sat once the vehicles began to move, that there was nothing that came as a surprise to me as I navigated into my rear seat. The cushion was softer than I'd expected, and the seat in front, the one Josie was now in, was very close so I could hardly see at all in front of me, but I created no delay. I had no time to make detailed observations of the car's interior because I became aware that the uncomfortable atmosphere had returned. In the front, Josie was silent, looking away from the mother beside her, gazing towards the house and Melania housekeeper coming across the loose stones carrying the shapeless bag that contained, among other things, Josie's emergency medicines. The mother had both hands on the steering wheel as though eager to set off, and her head was turned in the same direction as Josie's. But I could tell the mother wasn't looking at Melania housekeeper's approach, or at the house, but straight at Josie herself. The mother's eyes had grown large, and because the mother's face was especially thin and bony, the eyes appeared even larger than they were. Melania housekeeper put the shapeless bag in the trunk and thumped down the lid. Then she opened the rear door on her side and slid into the seat next to mine. She said to me, "AF, strap on belt or you get damaged." I was trying to understand the belt system, which I'd seen so many car passengers operating, when the mother said, "You think you have me fooled, don't you, girl?" There was a silence. Then Josie asked, "What are you saying, Mom?" "You can't hide it. You're sick again." "I'm not sick, Mom. I'm fine." "Why do you do this to me, Josie? Always. Why does it have to be this way?" "I don't know what you're saying, Mom. You think I don't look forward to a trip like this? My one free day with my daughter. A daughter I happen to love very dearly. Who tells me she's fine when she's really feeling sick?" "That's not true, Mom. I really am fine." But I could hear the change in Josie's voice. It was as if the effort she'd been making until this point had been abandoned, and she was suddenly exhausted. "Why do you pretend, Josie? You think it doesn't hurt me? Mom, I swear I'm fine. Please drive us. Clara's never been to a waterfall, and she's so looking forward to it." "Clara's looking forward to it? Mom, please." "Melania," the mother said, "Josie needs assistance. Get out of the car. Go round her side, please, and help her. She may fall if she tries to get out herself." There was silence again. "Melania, what's up back there? Are you sick too? Maybe Miss Josie make it." "What's that?"
I help her. AF too. Miss Josie all right, maybe.
Let me get this right. Is this your assessment? That my daughter is well enough to spend the day out? At the falls? This gives me concern about you, Melania.
Melania, housekeeper, was silent. But still, she didn't move.
Melania? Am I to understand you're refusing to get out to help Josie disembark?
Melania, housekeeper, was looking out between the front seats at the road ahead. Her face looked puzzled, like something further up the hill was hard to identify. Then suddenly she opened her door and got out.
Mom, Josie said, please, can we go? Please don't do this. Do you think I like this? Any of this? Okay, you're sick. That's not your fault. But not telling anyone? Keeping it to yourself this way, so we all get in the car the whole day before us? That's not nice, Josie. It's not nice you telling me I'm sick when I'm easily strong enough.
Melania, housekeeper, opened the door beside Josie from the outside. Josie fell silent. Then her face, full of sadness, looked round the edge of the car seat at me.
I'm sorry, Clara. We'll go another time, I promise. I'm really so sorry.
It's all right, I said. We must do what's best for Josie.
I was about to get out also, but then the mother said, just a second, Clara. Like Josie says, you were looking forward to this. Well, why don't you stay right where you are?
I'm sorry. I don't understand.
Well, it's simple. Josie's too sick to go. She might have told us that earlier, but she chose not to.
Okay, so she stays behind. Melania, too.
But no reason, Clara, why you and I can't still go. I couldn't see the mother's face because the seat backs were high. But Josie's face was still peering round the edge of her seat at me. Her eyes had become dull, as if they no longer cared what they saw.
Okay, Melania, the mother said in a louder voice. Help Josie out. Careful with her. She's sick, remember?
Clara? Josie said. Are you really going with her to the falls?
The mother's suggestion is very kind, I said. But perhaps it would be best if this time...
Hold on, Clara. The mother cut in. Then, she said, what is this, Josie? One moment you're concerned about Clara, how she's never seen a waterfall. Now you're trying to make her stay home?
Josie went on looking at me, and Melania, housekeeper, continued to stand outside the car, a hand held out for Josie to take. Finally, Josie said,
okay, maybe you should go, Clara. You and Mom. What's the sense in the whole day getting spoiled just because... I'm sorry. Sorry I'm sick all the time. I don't know why.
I thought tears would come then. But she held them back and went on quietly.
Sorry, Mom. I really am. I must be such a downer. Clara, you go on. You'll love the waterfall.
Then her face disappeared from the edge of the seat. For a second, I was uncertain what to do. Both the mother and Josie had now expressed the view that I should remain in the car and go on the outing, and I could see how likely it was, if I were to do so, that I would gain new, perhaps crucial insights concerning Josie's situation and how I might best help her. And yet her sadness, as she walked back over the loose stones, was very clear. Her walk, now she had nothing to hide, was fragile, and she made no fuss about receiving Melania, housekeeper's support. We watched Melania, housekeeper, unlock the front door and the two of them go inside. Then the mother started the car and we began to move. Because it was my first time inside a car, I couldn't make a good estimate of our speed. It seemed to me the mother drove unusually fast, and for a moment, fear came into my mind.
but I remembered she drove up the same hill every day, and so wasn't likely to cause dangers. I concentrated on the trees rushing by, and the large openings that would suddenly appear on one side then the other, through which I could see treetops from above. Then the road was no longer climbing, and the car crossed a large field, empty, except for a barn in the far distance, quite like the one visible from Josie's window. Then the mother spoke for the first time. Because she was driving, she didn't turn to me in the back, and if I hadn't been the only one present inside the vehicle, I might not have guessed she was addressing me. "They always do this. Toy with your feelings." Then a moment later, she said, "Maybe it looks like I'm being hard, but how else will they learn? They have to learn we have feelings too." Then, a while later, "Does she think I like being away from her, day after fucking day?" There were now other cars, and unlike outside the store, they were traveling in both directions. One would appear in the far distance and come speeding towards us, but the drivers never made errors and always managed to miss us. Soon the scenes were changing so rapidly around me, I had difficulty ordering them. At one stage, a box became filled with the other cars, while the boxes immediately beside it filled with segments of road and surrounding field. I did my best to preserve the smooth line of the road as it moved from one box into the next. But with the view constantly changing, I decided this wasn't possible and allowed the road to break and start afresh each time it crossed a border. Despite all these problems, the scope of the view and the hugeness of the sky were very exciting. The sun was often behind clouds, but I sometimes saw his patterns falling right the way across a valley or sweep of land. When the mother next spoke, it was more obvious she was speaking to me. "It must be nice sometimes to have no feelings. I envy you." I considered this, then said, "I believe I have many feelings. The more I observe, the more feelings become available to me." She laughed unexpectedly, making me start. "In that case," she said, "maybe you shouldn't be so keen to observe." Then she added, "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be rude. I'm sure you have all sorts of feelings." When Josie was unable to come with us just now, I felt sadness. "You felt sadness. Okay." She became silent, perhaps to concentrate on her driving and the cars coming in the opposite direction. Then she said, "There was a time, not so long ago, when I thought I was getting to feel less and less. A little less each day. I didn't know if I was happy about that or not. But now, lately, I seem to be getting overly sensitive to everything. Clara, look over to your left. You okay back there? Look way over to your left and tell me what you can see." We were crossing land that neither rose nor fell, and the sky was still very large. I saw flat fields, empty of barns or farm vehicles, stretching into the distance. But near the horizon was what appeared to be a town created entirely out of metal boxes. "You see it?" the mother asked, not taking her own gaze from the road. "It's far away," I said. "But I can see a kind of village, perhaps the sort where cars or other such items are made." "Not a bad guess. Actually, that's a chemical plant, and a pretty cutting-edge one. Kimball Refrigeration. Though they haven't had anything to do with a refrigerator for decades. It was the reason why we first came out here. Josie's father was employed there." Although the metal box's village remained distant, I could now make out tubes connecting one building to the next, and other tubes pointing up at the sky. Something about it reminded me of the awful Cootings machine, and a concern came into my mind about pollution. But just then the mother said, "It's a good place. Clean energy in, clean energy out.
Josie's father was once a rising star there. Then the metal boxes village was no longer visible, and I straightened in my seat again.
We get along fine now, the mother said. You could almost say we're friends. That's a good thing for Josie, of course.
I wonder, does the father still work at the refrigeration village?
What? Oh, no. He was substituted, like all the rest of them. He was a brilliant talent. Still is, of course. We get along better now. That's the important thing for Josie.
We traveled after that for some time without talking, the road now climbing steeply. Then the mother slowed the car and we turned down a narrow road. When I next looked between the front seats, the new road appeared only slightly wider than the car itself. Before us, marked into the road's surface, were muddy parallel lines made by earlier wheels, and there were trees pressing in on us from both sides, like buildings in a city street. The mother made the car continue down this narrow road, and though she drove more slowly, I wondered what would happen if another car came the other way. Then we turned another corner and came to a stop.
This is it, Clara. From here we're on foot. Can you manage it?
When we got out, I felt the chilly wind and heard the birds' noises. There were more wild trees around us as we climbed a path with rocks and clusters of mud. I had to take precautions, but I kept up behind the mother. And after a time, we went through a gap between two wooden posts onto another path. This one kept rising, and the mother had frequently to stop to allow me to catch up. It occurred to me then she might have been correct after all in believing this trip too difficult for Josie. Just at this point, I happened to look to my left, over the fence running beside us, and saw the bull in the field watching us carefully. I had seen photos of bulls in magazines, but of course never in reality. And even though this one was standing quite far from us, and I knew it couldn't cross the fence, I was so alarmed by its appearance I gave an exclamation and came to a halt. I'd never before seen anything that gave, all at once, so many signals of anger and the wish to destroy. Its face, its horns, its cold eyes watching me, all brought fear into my mind. But I felt something more. Something stranger and deeper. At that moment, it felt to me some great error had been made, that the creature should be allowed to stand in the sun's pattern at all, that this bull belonged somewhere deep in the ground, far within the mud and darkness, and its presence on the grass could only have awful consequences.
"It's okay," the mother said. "He can't touch us. Now come on, I need a coffee."
I made myself look away from the bull and followed the mother. Then quite soon we were no longer climbing, and around us appeared the rough wooden tables I'd seen in Josie's photograph. I counted